Good afternoon, everybody. We'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is now 1:05 p.m. Wednesday, April 6, 2022. Here with us producing a quorum is everybody with Representative Shragi and Fields, but it's to my knowledge that they're on their way. I'd like to say thank you to our recording secretary, Kieran, and our LO moderator, Lydia. Today we have two items on the agenda. They're both royalty in kind donation, royalty in kind bills. House Bill 409 and House Bill 410 approving PetroStar Inc. royalty oil sale and Marathon Petro royalty oil sale, respectively. These two bills do the same things with two different companies, and it's approving the contract for the sale of our royalty oil. One refers to the sale of Marathon Petroleum, and the other refers to PetroStar. As a reminder to the legislature, we cannot amend these bills. They're negotiated, and it's subject to our approval or denial up or down. And there is a time constraint for the renewal of the contract to happen by April 21st. Otherwise, they don't occur. Welcome to Representative Shragi at 1:06 p.m. And I'll just put on the record that I am a shareholder of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and they own the company PetroStar, and it's ANCSA Regional Corporation. So me and my family are five of 13,000 shareholders. So there is my conflict. We'll begin with an explanation of the RAK process and have DNR walk us through both bills. Then we'll take public testimony and act on each bill individually. As you all may remember, Mr. Johnny Meja, who's the DNR commercial manager, should be on Teams to provide us with presentation on both RAKs. Mr. Mazur, if you could please put yourself on the record and provide presentation. And I'd like to remind you and your team that we've only got until 2 o'clock here today. If members are comfortable, I'd like to move both bills, but if members aren't, then we won't. So just keep that in mind with your presentation, Mr. Mazur. So please begin.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Meza, and I work in the commercial section at the Division of Oil and Gas, Department of Natural Resources. With me are my colleagues, Chalindo Weresinghe, Ari Chobo, and our Deputy Commissioner, John Crowder. We appreciate the time for going to present to you this proposed contract for the sale of royalty oil in kind to Marathon and PetroStar. If you begin with page number 2 of the presentation, we have an agenda of what we plan to cover, first describing what is royalty in kind, then moving on to a brief summary of the history of sales for royalty oil in kind, a review of the statutory and regulatory language, the process that DNR has followed, and then the contract terms with the buyers of royalty oil in kind, Marathon and PetroStar. Continuing with page number 3, what is royalty in kind? This will be our first section of the presentation. And now moving on to page number 4. On this page, we have presented to you the language for the Alaska statute that provides authority for the DNR commissioner to elect the royalty share that the state receives for oil and gas resources, either in kind or in value. When selecting the royalty in value, the department receives a share of the proceeds from the sale of oil or gas by the producers, determined by the royalty rate. When the department selects its royalty in kind, the department is in charge of marketing that royalty oil, and then that's the process that we are trying to reflect currently. On the right side is an example of a letter that the department has provided to the legislature determining the selection of royalty oil in value. Moving on to page number 5, here we have the contractual reference for royalty in kind. Here is where the department and the producers agree on the royalty share on the production. Here, as an example, we have 12.5% highlighted in yellow, but also two other provisions reflecting the authority of the DNR commissioner to select the royalty oil or gas in value or in kind. On the right side is an example of a union agreement where we have a collection of oil and gas leases that carry on with this ability to select the royalty oil or gas in kind.
Thank you, Mr. Mazza. Before we move on, Representative Rauscher. And for the record, Representative Fields joined us at 1:09 p.m. Sorry.
Thank you. Chairman Puckett, just real quick question. It says here your highlight on the left page, on the left side of page 4, the royalty may be taken in kind rather than money. If the commissioner determines that the taking in kind is the best interest for the state, does it have to be in the best interest of those who he's dealing with too, or is it just up to him? And I guess I missed it if it was said so.
Just to clarify your question, Representative Rauscher, you're saying best interest of the operator that we're making the agreement with?
Right.
I would imagine that free market, I mean, whether they...
Well, I heard this one.
So, Mr. Mazza, if you can.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, in this determination that the commissioner provides for its selection of royalty in kind, has to be based on the best interests of the state of Alaska, so including the citizens of the state of Alaska.
So the answer is repeated, but it's not answering the question. So both sides have to agree on the agreement?
Yes, Representative Rauscher, through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner John Crowther for the record. The decision of the counterparty, the private company, to enter into this negotiation and to conclude it, we leave that to them to determine if it's appropriate for their economic interests. It's certainly their choice. You know, they can choose not to receive royalty in kind oil from the state if they determine that's in their economic interest.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Crowther. Any other questions before we move on with the presentation? Seeing none, please continue, Mr. Mazza.
Thank you. We are now on page number 6, and the purpose of this slide is to highlight the fields from which the state has ownership as a royalty owner. In the middle of this graph, you can see fields such as the Kuparo River and Prudhoe Bay units. On the western side or left side of this graph, you can see the Beartooth or Great Dermoustestude unit. This is federal land, so when we talk about royalty in kind, royalty oil in kind, within the context of this proposed contract, we refer to the owner, to the fields where the state has ownership. As a effect of this, then of course, we the state will not be talking about royalty oil from federal land. That's the purpose of this. Moving on to the next page, we transition into the second part of the presentation, which is providing a brief history of the royalty in kind contracts that the state has entered. We are now on page number 8. And on this slide, we have a graph showing the total royalty from the North Slope that the state has received from November 1979. And highlighted there in gray line, you can see the portion that has been selected by the DNR commissioner throughout this period to be taken in kind. The state, as you can see, has historically selected royalty oil both in kind and in value, and about 97% of royalty oil in kind has been from the North Slope. There has been some nominations of cooking the royalty gas in kind and also cooking the royalty oil in the past. Naturally, the amount of royalty oil in kind that the state can select depends on the level of production, depends on the different royalty rates that we have in our leases, and depends also from the demand side about how much the refineries will need, will have a demand for royalty oil from the state. Moving on to page number 9 is, we provide a table summarizing the types of contracts and the buyers for royalty oil in kind. You can see that this graph, this table has two sections. The first one is contracts that the state has entered where we have done it via a non-competitive disposition, via negotiated sales. At the bottom, we have contracts that the state has conducted these sales via competitive basis. The blue lines on the right represent the duration of these contracts. And you can see that the majority of these contracts that the state has entered to sell royalty oil in kind has been done via non-competitive or negotiated methods. So accounting for only 5% or 46 million barrels, that's the royalty oil in kind that the state has sold via competitive dispositions. And the majority of the oil that has been sold via this royalty in kind program has been dedicated to in-state buyers. And you can see that on the right side of this slide. For the Nikiski refinery that was dismantled in 1991, that was operated by Chevron. For other refineries in the North Pole and Valdez by Petrostar and Flint Hills Resources, and for the Nikiski refinery operated currently by Marathon. Now we can proceed with the next section of the presentation, which is the statutory and regulatory mandate governing the royalty in-kind process. We are now on page number 11, and here we wanted to provide one important statutory language governing this process, which is the requirement of legislative approval. The DNR commissioner needs to get legislative approval before executing the RIK contracts, the royalty in kind contracts. It also needs the recommendation and review by the Alaska Royalty Oil and Gas Development and Advisory Board. Although there are exceptions for this requirement, and if the contract is intended to relieve or to relieve storage or market conditions, which can only be used for up to 1 year. And this will become important as we review more slides as we move on in the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Just out of curiosity, has the legislature ever denied a royalty in kind negotiated contract that the administration has put forward?
Chair, I believe in our recollection of the recent contracts, we have not found any denial of proposed grant contracts by the legislature.
Thank you. Any other questions before we move on? Seeing none, please continue.
Thank you. We are now on page number 12, and here is a table listing the recent royalty in kind contracts, beginning with Tesoro and Petrostar in 2016, with Marathon and Petrostar in 2021 for a duration of 1 year, and the currently proposed ones in 2022 for 3 years and 5 years, respectively. The third column in this table provides information on the royalty barrels that are being sold within these contracts, beginning with 20 and 25,000 barrels per day. And you can see that there's a declining trend in the amount that the state has been selling to these in-state refineries. The most important component with respect to this section of the presentation in this table are the two last columns there showing for each of these contracts whether there was a review by the Royalty Board and whether it was required that the legislature approve this before the DNR commissioner can execute these contracts. So you can see that for the case of multi-year contracts, the department has obtained the support and recommendation of the Royalty Board as well as the approval by the legislature. Only for the cases where these contracts lasted for 1 year and these contracts were entered to relieve market conditions, the department didn't need the review of the Royalty Board nor the approval of the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. And Mr. Meza, you were starting to address it, and I'm just hoping you can expand a little bit. The 2 1-year contracts, the Petrostar and 1 year and the Marathon 1 year, that look like very similar conditions to what we're being asked to approve, but they are now for multiple years. I just want to understand a little more of why they were done as 1 year contracts as opposed to multiple year at that time.
Representative Hannon, through the chair, if we focus on the previous slide that displays the statutory language regarding legislative approval, there is an exception for if DNR enters into a contract to relieve storage or market conditions. That qualifies as an exception to have the review of the Royalty Board or the approval of the legislature. The reason why DNR enter into these one-year contracts to release storage for market conditions is that we, at that time, the royalty board wasn't fully staffed, and also we needed to continue the supply of royalty oil to the eastern refineries for meeting the demand by the citizens of the state.
One follow-up?
Follow-up.
So, Mr. Meza, so in particular, the Marathon contract that in 2021 was 10,000 to 15,000, and that's the exact same size of the contract we're being asked to approve, but now it will be over 3 years versus having that relief done in 1 year?
Representative Hannah, through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. Representative Hannah, through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner John Crowther. I would note that's an annual barrel volume. That's a daily
barrel
volume. So that would occur throughout the term, not over the full 3 year term, that volume, if that makes sense.
Thank you. That's the clarification I was trying to understand. Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thanks through the chair. Just a follow up to Representative Hannon's question. Does the state, as we look over the history of these RIK agreements, does the state tend to get a better deal for multi-year contracts, or do we tend to get a better deal for these shorter term contracts? If you could just comment on that history.
Representative Hughes, through the chair, as we will see later in the presentation, the additional value that the state obtains varies even if it's 1 year or multi-year. Overall, on average, we do obtain incremental revenue, but besides the additional revenue, which is essentially a benefit to the state, we also obtain benefits such as continuing supplying the crude oil to the in-state refineries, and also how that translates into refined products for the citizens of Alaska.
Does that help? Any other questions for Mr. Meza before we move on? Mr. Meza, please continue.
Thank you. So moving on, the next slide, page number 13, provides the statutory language for the review of the royalty board. It lists the criteria that the royalty board considers, and also which will be reflected in the documents that the royalty board, and we are now on page 14, the documents that the royalty board has provided to the legislature effectuating their recommendation of these proposed contracts. You can see on the right side of that slide on page 14 that you have screen captures of the written recommendation to the legislature for the Marathon and the PetroStar contracts. And through the review process, the department has obtained unanimous vote for recommendation from the royalty board for each of these two contracts. We are now on page 15 of the presentation, and here is one more citation of the statute, which is that these dispositions or sales of royalty oil in kind should be done by competitive basis, with except that the commissioner, the DNR commissioner, finds and provides a written determination that conducting a non-competitive sale is in the best interest of the state. For that purpose, the department issues a solicitation of interest, gauging the responses from the market participants, and we determine that one way or the other, in this case of the proposed contract, that a non-competitive disposition is in the best interest of the state. And in fact, as you may recall in the previous slide, about 95% of our sales have been done in a non-competitive basis. Okay. Moving on to page 16, we provide a graph of where the refineries in Alaska are, and specifically this is intended to reflect that the majority of the sales of oil in kind have been dedicated for in-state refineries, as is reflected by the regulatory language highlighted on the right side and in yellow in this slide. That it requires the commissioner to determine before dedicating any royalty oil or gas for export that the in-state demand is already met. Moving on to page number 17, here's a little bit more information on the in-state refineries. So particularly in the proposed contracts, we have asked and received information from Marathon, who operates the Nikiski refinery, and PetroStar, operating the North Pole and Valdez refineries. The production for the Nikiski refinery is about 55,000 barrels per day of refined product, and it's a mix between jet fuel, gasoline, and other refined products, and the majority of these refined products is dedicated for the consumption within Alaska. Similarly, for PetroStar, we have information on their maximum capacity, 22,000 barrels per day and 60,000 barrels per day, and the mix is between jet fuel, ultra-low sulfur diesel, asphalt, and heating oil. However, no gasoline is being produced in these refineries. Much like the case of the Nikiski refinery, the refined product is in its majority dedicated to the consumption within Alaska, and only a minor component is dedicated to outside of Alaska, like Canada or the Pacific Northwest. In terms of where they obtain their crude oil for the Nikiski refinery, about 80% comes from Alaska oil, a mix between Coquimbet and Alaska North Slope, and 20% from other sources in the U.S. or foreign sources. On the other hand, for PetroStar, 100% comes from the North Slope. In terms of employment, these companies provide information about how many full-time positions of Alaskans they employ for the refineries, and it can be seen in that table.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Before we continue, Representative Fields.
Thanks to the Chair, Mr. Meza, for the Marathon refinery. Where does that other U.S. and foreign crude oil at 20% typically come from, if you know?
Representative Fields, through the chair, we do not know that information. That may be something that should come directly from the company.
Okay. And Representative Fields, through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner John Crowther. In other legislative testimony, we've heard Marathon identify that in several recent years, that number has been closer to 90% for their domestic sourcing, domestic within Alaska. The majority, I understand, has been from other U.S. sources, but they certainly have international sources as well. And I think they keep that information proprietary for commercial reasons for the most part.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions before we continue with the presentation? Seeing or hearing none.
Thank you. We are now on page 18, and in this slide, We would like to highlight that on the left side of this slide, a graph that shows a critical piece of information for this contrast. The zero line represents the point at which the price of royalty in time oil equals the price of royalty in value. Whenever you see blue circles, that means that the price that the department has received by selling royalty oil in kind has been greater than the proceeds that the department has received from the producers when choosing its royalty in value. There are some red squares on the negative region of this graph showing the few instances where the department has obtained a lower price for its royalty oil in kind than the royalty in value. Overall, on average, for this period from 2008 until December 2021, the state has obtained 93 cents for each barrel of royalty oil in kind, in addition to what it would have received had the state selected all of its royalty in value. In other words, the state has received or has generated an additional $137 million in revenue by entering into these royalty oil in kind contracts, whereas the proceeds from these sales amount to almost $11 billion. And this complies with the regulatory language highlighted in this slide, which requires that the price of royalty oil in kind should be at least equal to the price of royalty oil in value.
Any questions? Seeing none, please continue.
Thank you. Thank you. And now we move to the fourth section of this presentation, which details the process that DNR has followed. We are now on page number 20. And here we would like to show the committee that DNR has carefully followed the language from the statutes and regulations determining how this process for the sale of royalty oil in kind should be conducted. In this process, we need to involve the royalty board in the decisions, rating determinations by the commissioner that are required by the statute, but also the review by the royalty board and the ability for the public to provide comments. You can see on the left side that DNR has evaluated the expiration date of its RIK contracts and has considered whether the sale of royalty in kind should be done in a competitive or non-competitive basis, whether it should dedicate its royalties within the state or for export, and whether it should have long-term or short-term contracts. We published a solicitation of interest gauging the information from the market. We evaluate those responses and make a decision to conduct a non-competitive sale. We inform the royalty board of such decision, and we conduct negotiations with the parties that show interest, in this case, Marathon and PetroStar. We publish a preliminary best interest finding showing why these proposed contracts are in the best interest of the state, and we provide a 30-day public comment period. We received no comments from the public, but there was an extensive review by the royalty board on these proposed contracts, from which we obtained unanimous approval for recommendation. After that, we publish a final best interest findings and provide a bill to the legislature, which is the current stage where we are right now.
Thank you, Mr. Mazur. Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair. Really appreciate this information. I have a question on competitive versus non-competitive sale. Is it accurate to assume that if you were to go a competitive sale route, realistically, the only competing entities would be in-state refineries, or is it realistic in the real world that you might see competition from out-of-state refiners?
Representative Fields, through the chair, thank you for the question. In the publication of the solicitation of interest, we obtained three responses from entities as a result of our intention to sell royalty oil in kind. Out of those three responses, only two showed interest in buying royalty oil in kind. Therefore, we evaluated how much benefit the department would have obtained by doing an auction with only two participants versus negotiating with each one of them separately.
If I could ask a follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thanks to the chair. It's interesting that looking back over the history of the program, it seems like the department has concluded that more frequently the non-competitive route gets a better deal for the state. Do you think that's primarily a result of the small number of bidders, so a competitive environment really isn't that competitive, or are there other factors that make the non-competitive sale approach more beneficial for the state?
Representative Fields, through the chair, I would think that besides the number of responses that we obtained, which are only a few, is also because of the requirements that are present in the regulations and the statutes that make the department make a written finding that in-state demand is met before dedicating any royalty oil for export, and that we need to secure a price that is at least as much as royalty in value, the process by the producers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, Mr. Mazur, we're going to take a brief at ease for a second. Please continue with your presentation, Mr. Mazur.
Thank you. We are now on page 21, and this is the same information as you saw in the previous slide, only with the dates showing where we are in this part of the process. Moving on to the next section, section number 5, which is a description of the specific terms for the proposed contract with Marathon and PetroStar. We are now on page number 23. We have seen this table before. The new information corresponds to the last two columns on the right side. The takeaway from this slide is that on the column that says netback pricing is that these contracts have the same valuation methodology. So there was no change with respect to the currently proposed contracts versus the ones that were entered into about 6 years ago. This follows a netback methodology because we begin the pricing of royalty oil in the U.S. West Coast, and we consider all of the components that are necessary to determine the price of royalty oil at the field, because that's the point where DNR or the state transfer title of our royalty oil to the buyer, the refinery in this case. We, the state, do not are not in charge of transporting or taking any risk when transferring that royalty oil. We do that at the field. The right column titled RIK differential shows one key element in the negotiating terms of these contracts, which is another deduction that determines the value of royalty oil. You can see that that value has increased from $1.95 per barrel to $2.25 for PetroStar and $2.23 per barrel for Miami.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. So, out of curiosity, the refined product taken in kind by the state, is it wholly used to participate in the market for sale, or is there any use by state agencies or anything like that?
Chair, if I understood your question, the department provides royalty oil to the buyer, the refiner, and they are the ones extracting refined products from that crude oil. The thing does not enter into the market of refined products.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Roche.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, I was just wondering, so these were, according to what I see here, where they're introduced on 4-4 of this year, is this a time specific? You need to get moving on it, or what's important here to you?
Representative Ralph Rauscher, through the chair, thank you. Yes, on page 21, we see there that on the top side of that table, we have a role called 1 year royalty in kind contract with Marathon, which expires on July 31st, 2022. There is a provision that DNR needs to comply, providing 3 months notice to the Morslow producers before electing its royalty oil in kind. Because of this 3 months notice in advance, that means we need to have the following contract with Marathon, in this case, to be executed as late as April 22nd. Should we take 1 week or 1 month longer than that, then that means that the refinery will have 1 week or 1 month without royalty oil. They still have provisions from Morslow producers, but royalty oil is also important for them.
Follow-up, Representative Rocha.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the information, but I also want to know, with the volatility of the market in the last month, we've seen go up and down, and I was wondering, has it given you pause on this, or are you still very comfortable?
Representative Rocha, through the chair, we believe that these contracts have been structured to account for that volatility, which has already occurred as well in the past. And if you recall, we presented a graph where we obtained a premium of 93 cents per barrel. During that 14-year period, there has been substantial volatility as well, and the state was still able to generate incremental revenue. So we are not that concerned about volatility.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hannah?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, you referenced when we first started April 21st. So that's the timeline. Could you reprise that?
Yeah, so originally it was my understanding that it was April 20th. Then
we have to have a floor vote of it before, or?
Well, so both bills are moving through both bodies. Right. And as I understand it, I think Senate Finance just recently took up the two RIK bills. But Mr. Crowther, if you can verify that final passage by both bodies or Mr. Meza, whoever it is, needs to occur by what date?
Yeah, absolutely, Chair. So John Crowther, for the record. we have to execute the contracts by April 22nd. To execute them, we have to have an enacted bill from the legislature prior to that date. So if both bodies of legislature are able to pass the legislation and have it be signed by the governor by the 22nd, we can execute those contracts and have a uninterrupted supply.
And I imagine we've got to work back the same way that we do with any piece of legislation as far as the days that it takes to transmit after a vote, et cetera.
And then, again, one
follow-up. That's correct.
And if for some reason that did not happen, it simply means there's an interruption in the contract, or do these bills expire if for some reason they weren't completed by April 22nd? Right.
Representative Hannon, through the chair, the bills do not expire on that date. There would just be an interruption in the contract and supply, and it would be up to the refiner, in this case Marathon, to either limit runs or to secure an alternative source of supply, subject to that uncertainty.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure and have it in my mind and I guess on the record, because you know we have dealt with some things that have finite timelines from the executive branch that they go poof on a set date. And it wouldn't be good if we didn't make the deadline, but I wanted to just make sure it was still valid, just delayed, and would cause problems for
not necessarily the end of the world.
Yeah, well, yeah. It doesn't evaporate.
Right. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McKay in the motion.
Correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, but if you look at the top of that page 21, the contracts with Marathon and Petrostar actually go to July 31st and December 31st of 22. So you do have some overlap, right? So if what Rep. Hannon said happens, you can go back to the previous contracts, right? Is that correct? Is that how I'm seeing this?
Representative McKay, through the chair, John Crowther here, I apologize for a little bit of unclarity there. The shortfall or interruption wouldn't occur in April. It would potentially occur at the end of that contract because we have to do the 90-day notification. And so we would technically be tardy in not nominating those barrels to receive them with the upstream producers. And so in theory, we wouldn't be eligible to receive them until that Q3 2022 period, later in that period, if that makes sense.
We've got nodding. So, any other questions, Representative Rocha?
I just wanted to thank Representative Hannon for her clarification, because that's what I was looking for, our timetable and not their timetable. So I'm glad you reiterated that for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else the panel would like to address as far as the questions that we just went through before we move on with the presentation? Seeing or hearing none. I'm hearing myself backfeed. I think I thought somebody was asking to ask a question. Please continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. We are now on page 24, and the purpose of this slide is just to provide a comparison of how royalty oil, the value of royalty oil is determined when the state selects its royalty in value versus when it selects its royalty in kind. On the left side is what happens when the state selects its royalty in value. And for that, we allow some deductions related to the transportation of oil to the U.S. West Coast. On the right side, that oil is no longer physically transported to the U.S. West Coast, but rather sold to the in-state refinery in Alaska. There is a distinction in one of the deductions between the marine transportation allowance and the RIK differential highlighted in yellow. And that comparison is what generates the premium that we have referred to in earlier slides, in the sense of generating incremental revenue to the state. Page 25 shows historical information of how we derive that premium. The blue line on the top of that graph represents the marine transportation allowance. The gray line represents the RIK differential. The vertical distance between those two lines indicates the source of the incremental revenue that the state obtains by selling its royalty oil in kind. Page 26 provides more information on the provisions of these contracts in terms of the flexibility or benefits that it gives to the buyers, the royalty in kind buyer, the refinery, but also the benefits in terms of flexibility for the state. For the buyer, they have flexibility of nominating zero barrels or reducing their nominations subject to the approval of the commissioner. For the DNR, as a seller, we have the flexibility of not guaranteeing any quantity, quality, or source of our royalty oil because we are not a North Slope producer. We are a royalty owner. So we are protected from that type of risk. If we were to have excess royalty to dispose of and the buyers were to have more demand for that, the contract would allow for additional sales of that royalty oil. Moving on to page 27, there we have two or three more provisions, one of them dealing with financial assurance. DNR or the state being a seller and the refiners being a buyer, there could also be a risk of non-performance or default or non-payment. To cover that risk, the department and the buyers have agreed that the guarantor of these buyers, the refineries, provide either a letter of credit, surety bond, or opinion letter to the department as a way to protect from that default risk. The value of that financial assurance varies by the refinery. It could be equal to 90 days worth of royalty oil or 50 days worth of royalty oil for Petrostar. There is a retroactivity clause in the contract as well. In case there are revisions in the future after an invoice is paid by the buyer, allowing both the buyer or the state to reflect more accurate information in that calculation. Lastly, there are two provisions that encourage the buyer or refinery to process the royalty oil within the state as refined products for the benefit of the citizens of Alaska, and that encourages the buyer to employ Alaska residents to the extent that they are available, willing, and at least as qualified as other candidates. Lastly, page number 28 provides the additional revenue that we referred to earlier for each of these contracts. Actual additional revenue of $31 million, $23 million for the 2016 contracts, and an estimate for the currently proposed contracts between $3 and $14 million for Marathon and $17 and $19 million of extra revenue for Petrostar. And that concludes our presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Meza and team. Any questions from committee members before we take each bill into public testimony? Seeing none, that's what we'll do next then. We'll open public testimony for House Bill 409. Public testimony for House Bill 409 is now open. I'd like to ask those testifying to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, if you can, to allow everybody the chance to speak and us to unfortunately get out of here in our rush timeline. With that, for 409, we've got online, looks like Doug Chapados. Mr. Chapados, if you could please put your name on the record and your affiliation and provide your public testimony, that'd be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and assembled committee members. For the record, my name is Doug Chapados. I am the President and Chief Executive Officer of Petrostar Incorporated. I am testifying today in support of Petrostar's proposed 5-year royalty oil contract, which is now before this committee. By way of background, Petrostar is a wholly owned subsidiary of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation and the state's only Alaskan-owned refiner. In addition to fuel distribution terminals located in Anchorage, Valdez, Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, and the interior of Alaska, Petrostar also operates two of the state's three commercial refineries, one in North Pole and the second in Valdez, both of which draw crude oil directly from the Trans-Alaska pipeline system. In fact, TAPS is the only source of crude oil supply to Petrostar, which means that contracts such as the one before you now are absolutely essential to Petrostar's continued operation. From this crude oil, Petrostar produces a variety of products, including jet fuel for commercial airlines, and well over 90% of the jet fuel consumed at the Department of Defense and U.S. Coast Guard installations located across the state, heating oil for residential and commercial customers, ultra-low sulfur diesel fuels for both on- and off-road uses, including marine diesel fuels, asphalt oil for road paving projects, and specialty low-sulfur turbine fuels for the exclusive use of Golden Valley and Copper Valley Electric Association. As previously testified to by DNR staff and as explained in the best interest finding, this contract is good for the state in terms of maximizing the revenues generated from Alaska's royalty oil share. It also benefits Alaskans by helping to maintain the in-state petroleum refining industry and thus preserves competition within the state fuels market. It is for these reasons that I encourage the committee to approve this RIK contract. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my statement. I appreciate this opportunity to address the committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chabados. Any questions from committee members as offered? Seeing or hearing none. Lydia, can you clarify that there's nobody else online willing to provide public testimony? And then I'll clarify that in the room, nobody is looking to provide public testimony on House Bill 409. Seeing none across the board, we will now close public testimony on House Bill 409. Are there any closing comments or questions from committee members on House Bill 409 or the department? Seeing or hearing Representative Hopkins.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 409, Work Order 32-GH-2121-A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, House Bill 409 has moved from committee. As we discuss House Bill 410, we'll have the yellow packet passed around. We'll now go to House Bill 410 and open public testimony. Public testimony on House Bill 410 is now open. I'd like to ask those willing to testify, please do so in 2 minutes. Provide your name and affiliation on the record and begin your public testimony. With that, we've got online Mr. Casey Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, if you can do as asked and provide your public testimony, that'd be appreciated.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick mic check.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Oh, copy. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members of the House Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Casey Sullivan. I'm the Government and Public Affairs Manager for Marathon Petroleum here in Alaska. I'm pleased to share our overwhelming support for House Bill 410. You know, the availability, the flexibility, and the stability that this contract offers will absolutely have a positive impact on our ability to optimize our ongoing operations at the Kenai Refinery. You know, I'm sure many of you know Kenai Refinery has been one of Alaska's longest in-state manufacturers, producing quality transportation fuels that literally move Alaskans since 1969. You know, I'll kind of keep it quick because I know y'all hear the bells in the background. I've provided a letter for the record, but, you know, I do want to underscore that this legislation before you is the result of, you know, really constructive dialogue and productive negotiations between the Division of Oil and Gas and Marathon. We very much appreciate the professional work that the division has had at all stages of this process and confident that this contract before you provides a positive shared value to all Alaskans. I think that the division really articulated well that and also in their best interest finding that it will continue to receive a price for its royalty in kind oil that exceeds the price had it elected to keep it in value. But for Marathon, the contract provides us with that stable supply of Alaska North Slope crude, while also giving us that flexibility to accommodate seasonal fluctuations and demand for refined products. So, again, you know, availability, flexibility, stability, those are all things that this contract offers, and we're thankful for the work that has gone on. So in closing, sir, Marathon believes in Alaska's future. We're committed to continuing our long-standing legacy of safely and reliably producing quality fuels day in and day out. It's our pleasure to offer our support, and we thank you and committee members, A, for your service to our great state, and encourage your support of passage of 410. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Any questions from committee members for Mr. Sullivan? Seeing or hearing none, Lydia, can you verify nobody else is online willing to testify and nobody in the room looking to testify on House Bill 410? Seeing or hearing none, we'll now close public testimony on House Bill 410. And any comments before we move to the will of the committee from committee members? Seeing none, Representative Hopkins.
I move House Bill 410, Work Order 32-GH, as in Grier Hopkins, 2122-A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no objections, House Bill 410 moves from committee. We'll pass the yellow packet around and get folks to sign it before we adjourn. Take a brief at ease.